Hi, I'm Joanna Burson, and you're listening to the EdTech Podcast Kano Takeover.
Perfect. So I'm very excited to have finally connected with Joanna Burson, who is the head of Kano Education. So welcome, Joanna.
Thank you, Sophie. It's great to be here.
And, you know, we've had an interesting time connecting because you're in the middle of a kind of roadshow across the States. Is that right?
Yes. So it's a bit of a tour of a few different schools that we work with, working with them on their existing Kano programs and how they're planning for to use some of the new products that we've just launched, in addition to visiting one of our big partners here, which is Connect Home Initiative.
Is that the initiative with the U.S. government?
Exactly. So We work with a few different types of partners when it comes to education. So I mentioned schools already. I'm just at a school right now here in New Jersey. After school programs. So I met yesterday with Girls Who Code. They do after school programs and camps and have just a wonderful community that gives us great feedback on Kano. And then community partners. And a big community partner that we have here are actually a few partners working together on Connect Home. And Connect Home is an Obama administration initiative, mostly through the Department of Housing and Urban Development, to bring high-speed broadband to low-income communities across the United States. So the goal was to bring internet to at least 28 communities and about 300,000 people here in the U.S. And as part of that program, and with the different internet partners, the focus is really to bring digital literacy and digital fluency training to the people who are receiving internet. And a main focus point has been teens. So different partners, including GitHub and a wonderful implementation partner called Everyone On, Best Buy and Best Buy's Geek Squad Academy, and then local partners like Boys and Girls Club and Salvation Army are all working together along with us at Kano to provide this digital literacy training. So we conduct these two-day training sessions in each of these communities where we go through different ways to use computers, different things that you can access on the internet, fundamentals of coding, and all the different things that you can build with code. And then at the end of the training, the teens bring the Kanos home. And one of the main reasons we're focusing on teens is because it's a great focal point within a family where they can then bring this to their parents and teach them different parts of using the computer, using internet, accessing information. And they can also bring this to their younger siblings. So it's been wonderful so far where we've worked with over 600 students and the program continues to grow. So I'm actually flying out to one of the communities in San Antonio for this training on Friday, and we'll be conducting it over the weekend.
Wow. And how long has that been going for, and when does that kind of wrap up, and what's the next bits after it's sort of formally finished?
Yeah, so Kano's involvement began in, I want to say, this spring. So around April, we started working very much with GitHub. So GitHub has been doing a lot of the curriculum piece around the digital literacy training. Yeah. So we began to work with them, and we had a smaller pilot early in 2016. I want to say January, late 2015, early 2016 in Brooklyn. And that's really where we got hands-on. We worked with GitHub to develop this curriculum. And then we started rolling out to the different communities later on in the spring. So we really don't see this as something that's wrapping up. We're continuing to launch in different communities because the program itself has been very successful. So the number of communities is growing. Kano has just become an official stakeholder partner in the relationship, which means that we're going to be more actively involved in the trainings themselves, as well as in the engagement over time. So it's not just about giving the Kanos and sort of leaving it there with each of the families. We're continuing to develop program and provide resources for the people who have received the training in the Kanos.
Okay, amazing. And I know that, so that's what you're up to in the US, but I was also looking at some of your different applications of Kano across the world.
Definitely. And that's part of what's really exciting about it, I think. We really see a spectrum of programs, and it's not for one particular group. So we talked about low-income houses in the U.S. fully embedded in the curriculum, and then more supplemental programs like after school camps and clubs. And then in terms of location, worldwide, so here in the US, and then you mentioned Africa. And I keep coming back to this idea of partners. The way that we're growing in these different parts of the world are with really great partners in those regions who understand the students, who understand the schools, who understand the needs, and can help us design programs that, one, solve local problems in the community, and two, really fit in based on what the infrastructure looks like. So one of these partners that we have is a wonderful organization called Their World. And Their World has an initiative where they aim to bring safe schools for girls to different tech hubs in Africa. So with them, we started again in this idea of starting small and then scaling. We've started with them with pilots in two schools, in two hubs in Africa, one in Kenya, and then the next one was in Uganda, and now we just launched in Nigeria as well. So this is a toolkit for teachers or club leaders in these schools in Africa to use Kano in a project-based way with the girls in these schools. So we have three different age groups there. The idea is that the girls will come after school, they come once a week, and they follow one of 26 lesson plans that we co-developed with Their World. So it's a 26-week program. They complete one lesson plan a week, and then they're differentiated by age group. So we have girls aged 6 to 10, and then 11 to 14, and then 15 to 25, following similar but of course differentiated lessons. So for example, whereas the 6-year-olds have projects where the 6 to 10-year-olds are imagining their future, imagining what the future might look like, and then using different applications to code art that looks like the future, or to code a world in Minecraft that looks like what their future world might look like. The 15 to 25-year-old group is working on their resumes and working on their CVs and thinking of more career and practical skills, taking more HTML and CSS type courses on the Kano.
So, but across that age group, I suppose the excellent part of it is, to broaden your horizons in that way. And, is one of the main aims to actually apply that skill set around coding and actually, increase their employability?
Completely. I think you hit the nail on the head. We really want to give them the exposure to, and I guess it's sort of twofold, because on one hand, the power of the Kano is such that they can use code to solve problems that they care about. So you're giving them exposure to coding, giving them that skill set. So they start coding art because they like art. They start coding music because they like music. Maybe they're taking the Code Academy JavaScript course. So we're giving them exposure to, very directly coding skills that do increase their employability. But on the other hand, what we're really about at Kano is getting people interested in using technology to solve problems that they care about, regardless of whether or not they might go on to be, very explicitly a software engineer. Yeah. So those digital skills around opening up a word processing app or opening up Microsoft Word and creating a cover letter, or using the internet to find information about a certain career path that you might not have known about before, or to look up facts about different parts of the world. It really runs the gamut of what you can do with the Kano. We want to help bolster those digital skills, explicitly give the exposure to coding, but not necessarily say, okay, now this is, a boot camp, we're going to learn to code. That's really not what the aim of most of our programs are. We do have some programs, like we're talking about the spectrum, some are more integrated and cover different subjects like math and art and social studies and history and reading, and some really are more focused on coding. But yeah, that's really not what the majority of our programs are aimed to do.
Okay. And what's your particular background in education as well? And how did you come to work at Kano and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I've been in education technology the past 8 years. So upon graduating from university, even before that, I'd tutored for a very long time. So even in high school, I always enjoyed tutoring. And okay, when I was in university, I had worked with a group that was doing some of the experimentation, because back then, even in like 2006, there weren't a ton of online platforms the way that there are today that made online education a lot easier.
So was it face-to-face tutoring?
Yeah, so I had primarily been doing face-to-face tutoring, but in college I was exposed and I started using some online tutoring platforms. And even if it wasn't necessarily like streaming, putting together curriculum packets that kids that I was tutoring could use by accessing stuff online. And I really saw the power of that blend of face-to-face interaction as well as the ability to access and take part of, whether it was an SAT course I was tutoring or math that I was tutoring, the ability to do some of that online was incredibly powerful. But I was actually pre-med. I hadn't planned to go into, I don't know what undergraduate degree would translate to ed tech, but I hadn't necessarily planned to, you know, continuing with the teaching track right after school. But yeah, so.
So then you went to Newton, and since then, obviously, you've joined Kano as well. So what drew you there? And
so I think the thing that drew me here and kind of the thread from Newton to here was that Newton was very much focused on personalized learning and competency-based learning. So the idea that young people and people were learning to, were aiming to achieve different skills versus receive like a certain score on a test. So the exposure to how young people, the things that engaged young people and got them excited about learning versus the things that might be more intimidating, like studying for a standardized test or for the SATs is a very good example, but really seeing kids get excited about and enthusiastic about whether it's science or math, and particularly using technology in those different subjects at an early age was something that I've always been passionate about. And just seeing that firsthand with all the different digital competency-based courses that Newton was building led me to want to focus more on that. And I found Kano. I was an early fan from the first Kickstarter, and the care that the company pays to getting kids engaged. So from the design of the product, which we spend a lot of time thinking about and a lot of time testing, that entire ethos was something that I really loved. So, you know, I came on board Kano actually almost exactly a year ago now, because I really wanted to focus on that engagement and confidence piece, specifically with using technology, specifically with coding in some ways, but not just for the sake of coding, but as something that's important for the future and really just understanding the building blocks of technology to allow young people to understand and participate in the digital world.
Well, I suppose that's the thing. So it brings to mind there's a really cool Arthur C. Clarke quote, which is about how technology is the closest to magic. So it still has that effect of creating a wow and, you know, people not necessarily understanding how things work or, you know, how it's operating, and that then driving the intrigue and the curiosity to like find out. And the interviews that I did yesterday, the educators were sort of talking about, you know, that ability to sort of create. So rather than just kind of passively take in information and learn that way, it's like learning through that creative process and picking things apart and putting them back together in a way that makes sense for them. So
totally, and that's it. I love that quote, and it is sort of a thread in my life too. I was obsessed with magic as a kid, but not, you know, it's demystifying that magic, because it's important that we give young people the tools that they need to be able to justify that, and I'm using air quotes that you can't say, to demystify magic, because then that's the only way that they'll actually be able to contribute, is if they understand the building blocks and the framework for thinking about how to talk to computers, you know, or coding. So I think that's part of the intrigue, and that's part of the power, is that when you present, you know, a class of kids with a kit, and you say, you know, how many of you have built a computer before? And almost no hands go up. And you say, how many of you think you can build a computer? Maybe a few hands go up. And then you say, well, I know today that you can do it. And then you see the excitement in the room and that confidence, that sense of satisfaction when a young person puts together the computer for the first time, and they can say, they can tell their friends, they can tell their teacher, they can tell their parents that they built a computer, and they know what a computer's brain is. They know they've heard the term operating system before. They've heard iOS, and now they have a little bit more of an understanding around what an operating system is. It's exciting. It's thrilling for them, but it's also really important for them to understand these things, and especially at an early age. There is a report that I really like that it was done by King's College, I believe, and it's called the Aspires Report. And it talks about how someone who comes from a low science capital background, so a family that doesn't have a scientist or doesn't necessarily talk about science, if they're not interested in STEM or technology by age 10, they're way less likely to be interested in it by age 14. And so being able to give someone that sense of excitement while then engaging them to want to learn more and to say, well, what if I do this? Or what if I can create this with technology? Or, well, if an operating system is this, then what is an HDMI cord? So sparking that curiosity and giving them even the framework for knowing how to ask the questions to get more information at such an early age is incredibly powerful.
Well, it's really interesting. I was watching a presentation once, and I suppose it was all around the idea of growth mindset and that kind of thing. But it really struck me that, that kind of idea that a family turning to their son or daughter and sort of saying, oh, no, you know, our family aren't very good at maths. And then that becomes like a self-fulfilling thing. So, you know, because it has gone before, it's sort of expected and therefore sort of placed a restraint already on that person's mindset or aspirations in that particular area. Whereas I suppose it's trying to explode that notion of, you know, whether something is or isn't predefined in terms of their success and, you know, their right to develop further in that particular specialism.
I couldn't agree more. And I love that you brought that up, because it is totally the ethos that we want to bring, because like you're saying, it is very much, even using technology for adults, for engineers, it's about resiliency, and it's about mistakes aren't bad things. It's about sticking through, you know, if you have, for example, you plug the HDMI cord and you can't find the output switch, or it's not, the TV is not on the right setting, and being able to work through those problems and then come out and feel like you owned it and say, actually, this isn't something that's insurmountable. It's not something that I can't fix. I can tinker with it, and I have the ability to power up a computer, to create what I want to create. It might not be perfect the first time, and give people the confidence that they can do that, but also say that it is okay if you don't get it, you know, the first time. Or it is okay to work these problems. And that's partially something that we focus on in the product and in making our guides very simple, very step-by-step, and having the resources available to make information gettable. So if you don't, you know, you don't do something the right way, or if the screen doesn't turn on the first time, giving the tools to say, oh, well, what might I have done wrong? And I can troubleshoot. I'm actually my own IT help desk. When you say if there is an issue, and you know the hand, a kid might raise their hand in the class and say, well, this isn't working, and you say, well, maybe go back to the last page, and what does it say there? And they read it out loud and says, oh, you know, make sure that the SD card is completely put in the right way. Or you say, well, what way does it look like that SD card is inserted in the computer? And they say, oh, okay. They take it out, they put it back in the other way. It's incredibly empowering for them to say that they actually fix that problem. And so for us, it's partially about the product, but it is also very much about the community and making this a place where it's not just for boys. It's not just for girls. It's not just for people who have been, and I'm using air quotes again, techie their whole lives, or whose, you know, parents are in technology. It's something that anyone can connect to and access. And we want to help, and our partners really help us create these environments where people can feel safe and really foster more of a growth mindset, versus saying, you know, this is not something that I can do. This isn't for me. Which I haven't done this before, et cetera.
It's very interesting as well, if you think about the success of gaming and the sort of uptake of gaming, because that's an incredibly broad church, in the sense of the people that love gaming and actually the resilience you need to try and continue and to find solutions. And, you know, if you're thinking in terms of 80s computer games, which is probably my latest reference, sort of defeating the boss man. And actually, if, you know, the kind of sort of skill set that you need and the resilience and, you know, the collaborative nature now of gaming is, you know, you can see the comparison between the two. And obviously it's just approaching that other experience outside of what is a typical game, but with the same sense of enthusiasm and, you know, upbeat nature, I suppose. So not suddenly thinking, you know, I don't know, like a specific task, but that it can be a fun thing to go and do together.
Definitely. And I think like something that you're kind of touching on gets back to a question that I'm not sure I answered earlier, but when you're saying, you know, you asked about what my remit was, what the education team at Kano does, and the idea, and I promise I'll tie it back to the point that you just made, but what we do is we work with education programs, and I'll kind of back up even and say with the way that Kano launched in 2013 as a Kickstarter was more for a consumer audience. We sold through Kickstarter through and continued through our Kano.me e-commerce channel. Now, what we saw was that we had a lot of interest from the more formal education community. So teachers who saw the power of bringing something that looked and felt more like a game to their classroom, an educational game, essentially, or someone who was looking to start a coding club, or someone who ran workshops, and they would purchase Kano in bulk. And so we then started focusing on these other user groups. So on one hand, a product incredibly educational, incredibly powerful learning tool with a lot of gamified elements and a lot of young people using Kano in their living room and more in the home setting. Then what we started to do was to focus on how we could wrap that in a way to keep that gamified, that sense of engagement high in these educational or learning programs. So when I joined about a year ago, my remit was really to support classrooms, clubs, camps, workshops, communities, understand what they were doing with Kano, better help package Kano for them so that what that looks like are different curricular-aligned projects. So in the UK, aligning projects that teachers can use in the classroom to the computing standards. Or in the United States, aligning them with the Next Generation Science Standards or Computer Science Teaching Association standards, and structuring lessons that teachers can then say, keep that sentiment of student-led learning, but in a way that then helps recap and helps capture what students have learned and how that would then align to different curricular objectives. So what we do is we support those programs, we help build the community. So you talk to Corey, you talk to Sam, help get that, share those best practices with other teachers who are looking to get started with Kano, help share their challenges and then improve our resources so that other teachers can learn from the way that we've solved challenges in other classrooms and then grow the community. So continue to go to conferences, to reach teachers who are looking for new innovative products and programs. But again, it kind of gets back to like what you're saying with keeping things gamified, keeping them engaging, keeping them staying true to our core, which is engagement first, confidence first, resilience, these things that are very important to us, and bringing them to different settings.
And I have to ask, do you have like any competitions in the office for who can put the kits together the quickest?
We have so many competitions in the office. Fastest kit assembly, definitely. I've actually put the kit together. I attempted to do this when I was at EdTech Europe last year during my presentation, which was like multitasking. And I think I managed to do it, though not as quickly as I'd hoped. But we have a lot of game development expertise on our team. Our head of software, the first head of software at Kano, had come from PlayStation. Our animators, our designers, they really have a lot of background in creating games. So for them, a lot of people stay in the office late and play games, and their job is creating an amazing learning product that has a gamified feel. So there's lots of gaming going on.
And I love your UK office because it's like a magical place where you enter a cafe and all of a sudden you're in the Carnot offices and you're not quite sure how you got there. But for anyone else who's experienced that in London, you'll know what I mean.
It really is inside of a coffee shop underneath the Rise Accelerator. But when you're telling people how to get there, there's no way to do it and not sound
bonkers.
Like bonkers or like completely way cooler than at least I am. So, go through the coffee shop and it's in the back and it sounds like it's a secret door. But yeah. And then you walk in and it has like this completely like tech office industrial design feel to it. Except that we often have kids in the office because we're always testing our product. And so you've got this like very kind of hip tech office feel with tons of kids running around playing ping pong, testing
the product.
Exactly.
And then just you're talking about sort of the different expertise on your team. So with people from previously from PlayStation and so on, but on the education side as well. So you've just recruited Oliver Beach, who, for those who may have watched Tough Young Teachers, was formerly on the Teach First program. So could you tell us a little bit about getting Oliver on the team, the story behind that, and what he'll be doing as well?
Definitely. It's really important for us, and we're so happy to have Oliver on board. We've also hired, so the team has actually grown to three now. So it's myself, Oliver, and then we've hired another teacher whose experience is in both the U.S. and Africa, developing different STEM programs and specifically with young women. And especially with them, with Oliver, the goal is to grow the learning programs that use Kano and the new products that we're developing and will continue to develop and make these things not only simple and accessible for young people, but for the teachers who are going to be using them increasingly in classrooms and in different types of learning spaces, libraries, as you've spoken to Corey, or museums. So it's really important that we have the teacher's point of view from the very beginning as we're developing the products, as we're developing the software, considering the teacher as another user, so having a dashboard that would be optimized for the teacher, continuing to get feedback from teachers, which is something that we've been doing, from day one, holding workshops in classrooms and having teachers and schools help co-develop curriculum with us. And now bringing Oliver in is really a testament to how much we will be continuing to focus on our education programs and listening to the community to develop resources and support them better. So we're thrilled to have him in the building. He brings a ton of expertise. I think it just really expands the potential of what we can do now with different types of learning spaces across the globe.
And so just on that, so in terms of what's currently happening, I guess it's Carno 2 and the launch of that and the new Kickstarter. So can you tell us a little bit about the three different parts that make up that launch and what people can get excited about?
Definitely. And for those of the listeners, I'm sure we'll give them lots of links and resources, but Kano, the broad level description of what Kano is it's the creative computing company. And what we launched with was, and our flagship product has been, the computer anyone can make. So basically, and this is what we launched in 2013 on Kickstarter. This is the product we've been continuing to improve and add to on the software side as well as on the hardware side. And so this is really, a powerful classroom product where you build a computer and then you use all different types of coding applications to create art and games and music to solve different types of problems. And these are we work with teachers to create different lesson plans and project-based curricula using the computer kit. And so it's really this blend and living at the seam of digital and physical is how we describe it. You're not just thinking about living in the digital world by coding on your computer. It's something that we all do use YouTube, something that we're all accustomed to doing, really bring that physical element into it. So what the new products do is they extend this, our ability to do something in the digital world that has an impact on the physical world and vice versa. So we've launched a camera kit that you build yourself. Again, the idea that the first interaction with all of our products is building them yourself. So in getting that sense of empowerment. So camera, build yourself a pixel kit. So this is an LED light board that you put together, and then a speaker kit. And the fourth product that we've launched, which is something that is incredibly exciting for a number of reasons I'll get into, is Kano Code. So this is a very simple and engaging, intuitive programming interface that anyone can access from the web. So if you go to world.kano.me/projects, you'll see a number of projects that use block coding, essentially. One, you can just use it even without the physical kits. But with this coding interface, what you can do is very simply code your camera to say, take a picture every 30 seconds and program your favorite filter, add a bunch of stickers, and then you have, you can string pictures together and create a little animation or a GIF file. You can plug in a sensor, and these are also part of the new system, plug in a sensor that then programs a camera to take a picture every time your younger sibling walks into your room and steals one of your toys. Mm-hmm. So it really then gives, again, that physical sense. You're coding physical apps that you can then share with the community. And each of the kits will have hundreds of projects. And we already do have hundreds of projects up on the website that you can right away start engaging with. Very simple, step by step. And then once you have a sense of how to use the system and you sort of have this framework for thinking, you can, it's an invention platform. You can code anything that you want that blends the digital and physical world.
Do those three kits or those four new kits, are they standalone or do they have to work with the original kit itself, the original computer?
So they're totally standalone. You can get one of them, you can get all three of them. They can work with the Raspberry Pi, so that original kit, you could use the original Kano to program, to access the programming interface I just described, and then program those physical kits. Or you can use any computer. So if you buy, for example, the Pixel kit, and I'm sitting right now on my MacBook, and I go to world.kano.me/projects, through Bluetooth, I can connect to my Pixel kit, and I can program my Pixel kit to scroll the temperature for Newburgh, New York, which is where my parents live. And I can do that from my computer here, and that will scroll on my Pixel board. So it's really, it opens up what and where you can use Kano.
Can you tell us a little bit about Kano Academy as well?
The Kano Academy Network is something that we're building. These are really our partners that we've been hands-on with. And we kind of use Academy broadly, but with the Kickstarter, what we're doing is we're getting schools on board with 20 of every Kano kit. So 20 of the computer and screen kits that have been our flagship product for the past few years, as well as 20 Pixel kits, 20 speaker kits, and 20 camera kits. And what I was talking about with one of the schools here right now in New Jersey. We're working with them to co-develop projects that they can use with these kits in their classroom. So, for example, one of the ideas that came out was this idea of having a connected school where several classrooms in the school will have Pixel kits. And the classrooms will talk to each other. They'll scroll the morning announcements across the Pixel kits. They'll program them to do these different things that connect to different classrooms in the school. Now, that idea is something that we're planning to share with another Kano Academy school in Alpharetta, Georgia, called Amana Academy. And they're thinking of different ideas of what they can do with their 20 kits, 20 of each type of kits. So we'll continue to connect these schools and the ideas and the projects that they have as we're, again, kind of getting back to the idea that with Oliver on board and with the other teachers that we now have in-house, really developing these different types of projects that we can share across schools.
And do you find, like, I know with other organizations, especially around coding, you know, that you get these amazing communities. Well, how do they go about kind of sharing their best creations with you?
Yeah, so well, we have Canna World, which we're growing more with the education use case. So Canna World is our online web portal where anyone can share what they've coded. So if you've coded a picture and make art that is your favorite, I'm looking at a tiger, right? I'm sitting in a coffee shop and there's, for some reason, a coffee bag with a picture of a tiger on it. I also like tigers. So if I coded a tiger and I shared that to Canna World, and I'm a teacher and I'm doing a lesson on different types of animals, and as part of that, I want to have the kids code, you know, their favorite animal. I can find the coded tiger, and then my kids can access that code, and then they can remix it. So they can change the color of the tiger's spots, or they can create a leopard with the code. Or
the creations get shared initially, and then people in the community can come in and repurpose that or change it, and it continues to evolve on that platform.
Exactly. And what we want to do over time is have these different forums where different schools can be together in a network, whether that is through Canna World or whether we've got, you know, Facebook groups is great for this. So we can have, you know, a Facebook group. On Twitter, we're at Team Canna. We're very plugged into the community on Twitter. So this is part of what Oliver's focusing on as well, is how to help the community better communicate with each other. And we have several ideas, and we invite ideas. Like, this is what we do. We love working with our partners on this, and this is one of our main focuses going from the end of this year going into 2017, is facilitating that communication.
Okay. And well, I know, I guess previously there has been one of the problems, if we're thinking about EdTech broadly, is you know, people come across budget in education, it gets spent on, when you're talking about the seam between digital and physical, gets spent on physical hardware, and then can get, you know, with the tsunami of information and scheduling within a school, sort of left to one side with always the good intention that it will be picked up in the future. So, like, how does Canna then work to ensure that that doesn't happen, and, you know, that initial investment, I suppose, is really made the most of?
Yeah, couldn't agree more that with all of the different focuses in a school and different pressures and, you know, with timing, we really want to be able to provide as many simple resources as we can. So continuing to push those out to the community is something that's very important to us. We just started our monthly newsletter with different tips and different lesson plans and resources that teachers using Canna can use in their classrooms. Making sure that we're relevant. So something that's very important for us is authenticity, is staying close to different things that are important for teachers to include in the school day already, instead of adding an extra element. So even, you know, when we're thinking about how we help instructors communicate with one another, we could use Canna World, but we want to be where teachers are and where it's easy for them to be already. So this is something that we do by talking to all the teachers in our community, to talking to teachers who don't necessarily have the budget or the space to have Canna in their classrooms. This is part of the goal with the Canna Code, the software that we launch. Anyone can access Canna Code from any computer. Anyone can access Canna World from any computer that has, you know, web access. So we want to continue to be able to meet schools or teachers or programs where they are, to bring the creative computing of Canna to them in a way that works for them. I'll give another example of, you know, because the hardware is very powerful, but if a teacher might only have, you know, say a budget for one or two kits, we provide ideas and resources for how to use one or two kits. So one of the things that, and we actually take these ideas from teachers who are doing these things. So we had a teacher who started a show and tell program, Canna and Tell, where she would send two Cannos home with two children for 2 weeks. And then they would come back and show the class what they had done with their families on the Canna.
That's like the equivalent of when you got sent home with the class hamster.
Exactly. I wanted to call it Keno Hamster, to be fair. Yeah. So wait, that you also do that in the UK? Because that was definitely something that we did in the US.
Well, yeah, either I've watched like an episode of The Simpsons and thought it happened to us, or I'm sure it did happen to us, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So it's like almost like the class pet. And that also is very empowering because you're being trusted to bring the device home and to do something with it. It's in your home and to come back and to show the class what you've done. So we love that idea, and we shared that with other teachers, and we've seen that as something that's grown. Or another example, with one or two kids, we had a school that plugged the Kanos into their hall monitors in between classes, or after school, someone could a privilege or a reward would be that someone could program or create their artwork and put that on display on the monitor that everyone walking through the hallway would see. So there's a number of different creative ways that you can do things with Kano, regardless of the budget. On the other end of the spectrum, we have Kano integrated where every fourth and fifth grade student in the school uses Kano as part of their project-based learning curriculum. So it's about our learning from the community and then saying, okay, this is something that's worked. Now let's bring this to someone else and map this to a similar situation for someone else who wants to bring Kano to their school but doesn't quite know how.
Cool. And if I understand right, you, for the listeners of the EdTech podcast and also educators broadly, there's a discount till the end of October. Is that correct?
Yes. So 20% off from now to the end of October, celebrating back to school.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. So one thing I was going to ask is, so you are based in London, but travel a lot, I'm guessing.
Yes.
So in the next kind of month or couple of months, where can people find you? Are you attending any events or, is there any other things coming up where people can connect with you in person as well?
We have the EdTech Summit here in London as well on November 4th.
Yeah.
So a few London-based events before the end of the year. Then there's BET. Again, in January, that's also here in London, as you know. We're actually heading to a conference in Detroit in the end of October, kind of, again, getting back to this idea of supporting our partners. It's an expeditionary learning. And actually, we can link to the website for expeditionary learning. But one of the schools that we work with, I mentioned them in Alpharetta, Georgia, follows the expeditionary learning approach, which is project-based learning for real-world applications. So, for example, all second graders for a semester, their expedition is redesigning their playground, and they have a number of projects that incorporate math standards by creating a model of the structure that you might add to the playground, or literacy standards, ELA standards, and saying you need to write a letter to your principal to petition for the structure that you want to add to the playground. Anyway, they're having a wonderful conference at the end of October that we'll be attending. And then really conference season picks up in the U.S. in spring next year. So we'll be at ISTE, which is in San Antonio, I believe, next year. We'll be at South by Southwest EDU in March.
Yep.
We're really looking ahead into sort of next conference season as well.
Awesome. That sounds really cool. I like the Detroit event idea, and had a really interesting podcast interview with one of the Global Teacher Prize nominees, Joe Fathery. Mm-hmm. So he's a teacher based out in Illinois, and he's part of the National Network of State Teacher of the Year as well in the US, and he is like full on all about project-based learning, but all about applications in the real world and putting his students in front of real world situations and then sort of watching them connect with businesses and opportunities in the local community. And yeah, really, really cool.
I love that. And that's another part of our programs that I think a lot of the teachers using Kano really also are very devoted to the idea of authentic learning and, like you're saying, connecting students to the communities and giving them exposure to different career paths. So one of the things that we do with schools is we offer Google Hangout sessions where the kids can dial into us and we can show them around the office and they can meet industrial designers and they can meet software engineers and they can meet people on the marketing team to give them some insight into the different types of careers available at a company like Kano.
Wow. And so if you're a school listening in, how do you go about doing that?
Email us. So you can always reach out to education@cano.me. And yeah, you know, we're always open to whether it's, like we're saying, Google Hangout, whether it's feedback on a project, whether it's help, it's whatever it is, we're here for you.
That's very cool. And then just finally, just to wrap up, because I'm sure your coffee must be getting cold after this chat. What I've been developing as well is it's almost like an ongoing book club, I suppose. So each interviewee, I've been asking them which are their top reads. So that could be anything from fiction to leadership stuff that they like, to specifically around education, or, you know, it might be people's biographies. So do you have any top reads that you'd like to add to that list?
Yeah. Well, I feel like I would be doing myself a disservice if I didn't mention the Ken Robinson Creative Schools. He's just so inspiring.
And he's back at BET, isn't he, next in January?
Yeah, he is back at BET. I mean, I could talk about TED Talk binges for a really long time. Another, I guess, kind of on that theme, I think, you know, the listeners here would probably also know Sugata Mitra.
Yeah.
His Beyond the Hole in the Wall, I believe is what it's called. You know, he's got TED Talk, but he also has the book on it as well.
And how about, I don't know if you're active on Twitter or if kind of have any other shout outs that you want to make. So either people that have influenced you or Twitter chats that you like or anything else?
So the first thing that actually comes to mind is like different networks. So teachers who, for example, use a certain tool. And the one that comes to mind right now is Kahoot. So we love Kahoot. They have an incredible community. And even just following Kahoot and their hashtag and seeing what different teachers using Kahoot are doing is a great way to kind of get exposure to different teachers who happen to be using the same tool. So I really like following different companies that are very active in the community and seeing what they retweet. And that helps us learn about different applications of ed tech in classrooms, because you see it. It's such a great example. You just see it right there.
Okay, Kahoot. So, and it's hashtag Kahoot, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they're at Get Kahoot.
Okay. Is there any other thing that you would like to cover before we go today?
I mean, I think on this theme of getting people involved and what, you know, how people can get involved, I mentioned emailing education@cano.me. So if you're an existing Cano user, if you're someone who has any questions, email us. We're very responsive. We'd love to hear from you. Two, if you're in London, one of the things, I mentioned we do a lot of testing with young people in our office. And every Thursday we have a club that we call Cano Explorers Club. And anyone can come. It's free. And you can sign up at our website. If you go to cano.me/explorers, I believe.
Okay.
So you can always, sign up to come into the office of the website. Follow us on Twitter. We're very active, as I said, on Twitter. And please check out the Kickstarter campaign. We talked about these physical products. My words can't do them enough justice. We have tons of videos up there. So even just to get inspired about the future of education and what's coming, go check out those videos.
And when does the Kickstarter campaign end? When's the deadline?
October 27th.
Okay, so it's a big date.
Yes.
Awesome. And what have you got left in your US trip?
Yeah, so I'm going to visit a few more schools in New York today. Tomorrow I leave for San Antonio, and I spend the whole weekend conducting the trainings with working with GitHub, Geek Squad Academy from Best Buy, everyone on to conduct the trainings for young people as part of Connect Home.
Amazing. Joanna, I just wanted to say thank you very much, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
I'll get back to my coffee now, but thanks so much, Sophie. Really great speaking with you.